the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday, the 6th of October, 2011. It was on this date in 1991 that I lost my biggest fan. Helen Regan Buckmaster passed away 20 years ago today, so today's edition of the Buckmaster Show is dedicated to her memory, my mom. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. Also, our simulcast partners, we're delighted to have our friends up in Globe and in Gila County. They listen to us on KJAA AM 1240. In Douglas and Cochise County, it's KAPR AM 930. The Buckmaster Show is always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We have live streaming of the show there, along with an archive of our previous programs. Plus, the Buckmaster Show can be heard anytime at TucsonSentinel.com. The Sentinel is Southern Arizona's online news service. We are live Monday through Friday from noon to 1. Today's lineup includes a leadoff interview. We will be spending the first half hour of the program, in fact, with State Senator Frank Antonori, a Republican representing District 30. He's always outspoken, always talks about what's on his mind, and there are plenty of things on his mind this afternoon. At about 30 minutes past the hour, we welcome in the former Chief of Staff of the United States Army, General John Wickham. General Wickham is the Buckmaster Show contributor on military and foreign affairs. We'll close out the show with Attorney Don Luce, the Buckmaster Show contributor on legal affairs. Our program is interview-driven, but there is always room for you. In fact, we encourage you to join the conversation 790-2040 or toll-free 1-866-725-5467. You can email your questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them using the Buckmaster Show Facebook page. We begin now with State Senator Frank Antonori, a Republican representing District 30 up at the state capitol. Senator, good to see you.
Well, thanks for having me on, Bill.
I'm telling you, the Republican leadership, from top to bottom, not happy campers today with the Independent Redistricting Commission, the latest on those congressional district boundaries. You want to join the chorus?
Well, I'd like to thank and welcome them to the chorus to begin with. We've been singing this ever since May, when we saw some of the first indications that there was sort of a slant in the direction that the commission was going in, and I don't think you've got myself and Terry Proud, I know, has been very vocal about it, and a few other members of the legislature that have said, yeah, this is clearly a gamed system. The system was gamed from the beginning, and I'm not surprised by the outcome. I knew this is exactly what was going to happen when they were going to draw these months ago.
Court action likely over these boundaries?
Always. There would have been a court action whether or not the districts came out in an opposite direction. One side or the other would take it to court. So, yeah, there'll be definitely major legal battles over these districts.
So what happened with these districts?
Well, you know, if you
What's
talk...
the bottom line?
Well,
did we get to this point?
The bottom line is, from my perspective, I'm sure those on the left side of the aisle would have a different point of view. What they did is they strategically packed as many Republicans as they could into four congressional districts, mostly in the Maricopa County area, and they centered the base of power in the state again, which I was really surprised because Ms. Mathis is from Southern Arizona, and I would think that she would not want to be contributing to consolidating power in Maricopa County. But
she voted with the Democrats,
right?
On this,
right?
On
and
the
I believe,
3-1 vote.
I believe this map strongly consolidates power in Maricopa County, north of the Gila. We will be lucky if we have one member of Congress from Southern Arizona with this map. It's conceivable that we could have two.
Really? We could be cut back
sure.
to just one?
Mr. Grijalva is not safe. That there's a large portion of that district that is now in Maricopa County, and that's why the Hispanics are not really happy with that district. That's correct.
District 7.
So he could face a challenge from Maricopa County, and someone from Maricopa County now could win that seat, and that seat could be lost. The only seat would be the CD2 seat that is in Southern Arizona, but CD1, most likely that will be represented by somebody from Flagstaff. CD3 could be somebody from Maricopa County. So again, we've lost a lot of influence in Southern Arizona. It's an abysmal disaster for Southern Arizona, as far as I'm concerned. But what it really does is it consolidates power in Maricopa County, because now you have, of the nine congressional districts, six of them go in or take part of Maricopa County. So you could theoretically have six congressmen from Maricopa County, which I don't think anybody would appreciate.
So what you have is almost the balkanization of Tucson by splitting up segments of Tucson into three congressional districts.
Correct.
So with that, diminished influence.
Yeah, I would agree, because if you look at CD1, do you honestly believe somebody who's from Flagstaff is going to spend a lot of time down in Douglas?
I'm shaking my head big time. That's an amazing, the way that boundary is.
Just,
that's like the top of the state to the bottom.
I spend, in my legislative district, which is 8,000 square miles, the ninth largest district in the state, there are eight districts bigger than mine, which is three counties, but it's relatively compact. District 30 is almost a round district in a way. It takes me about four and a half hours to clearly drive from one end of the district to the other. But I spend about $400 a month in gas driving around the district, because I go out to Cochise County as much as I can. I go down to Green Valley as much as I can. I got the foothills, you know, and I'm lucky enough to live in the middle of the district, but trying to cover all that turf. And my seatmate, Dave Gowan, who lives way out in Cochise County, it is a lot for him to come clear up from Cochise County and spend
so
a lot of time.
So imagine with a congressional district that goes
it's impossible.
300.
And you have a weekend.
Three or 400
miles. So you come back from Congress on Friday, you got to be back in Washington on Monday, and you got to spend a day or two traveling your district. It's going to be virtually impossible. And spend time with your family at home. I don't think you're going to see a lot of effective representation with these large from one end of the state to the other. The District 1 covers three boundaries. It covers the Utah boundary, it covers the New Mexico boundary, and the Mexico boundary.
And the international boundary.
It's impossible for someone to represent that broad of a demographic effectively, and it's just an unfortunate way that they drew these maps.
It's 1211 on the Buckmaster Show, 790-2040. If you would like to speak with Senator Antinori, 790-2040. Now, how does this affect your own personal plans, because you have formed an exploratory committee to possibly run for Congress, but which district would you be in?
Well, right now I live in what would be CD2. I am looking at if it would be necessary to move into CD1 or possibly further north into the one that makes up Pinal County. I haven't decided on how that's going to go. As it's drawn right now, CD2 becomes more Democrat favorable to a Democrat to run. It becomes less favorable for Republicans. So I'd have to see whether or not I want to take my chances where the odds in the current CD8, as difficult as they were, would now become even more difficult in a CD2. So that's something I'd have to weigh.
It's a huge shakeup, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But again, if you follow the Constitution of the state, there's no way you could have drawn these districts. And the only way you get what we have now is if you ignore the Constitution from the state. Making them compact, respecting communities of interest, obviously was not part of the plan when these districts were drawn, because they're not compact. And they divide literally numerous communities of interest, and I just don't see folks, appreciating that this commission has decided to split and divide their community. And Green Valley is a prime example. I mean that in Sal Rita, they're divided now because of these maps.
A couple of weeks ago on our Friday Reporters Roundtable, one of our, I think it was Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com, took issue with you, and not you specifically.
The legislature.
Yeah, the legislature, of putting together a budget really in the dead of the night.
You know, and I took issue with that comment, because I was on the Senate budget team. The Senate president had us working on that starting on January 15th. We finished up about a month later, a little more than a month later, in the middle of February. And we actually released the Senate's budget in late February. And then that budget was actually voted on in early March. That budget was out there for weeks and weeks and weeks for people to see, because we began negotiating with the House and the governor, because the House budget and the governor's budget and the Senate budget were different. Those negotiations occurred, and there's a lot of people well aware of what those negotiations were, back and forth. What Mark doesn't understand, because he doesn't spend a lot of time in Phoenix and doesn't see the process, the budget is negotiated between the House, the Senate, and the governor, and you begin to marshal votes and whip votes. And once you realize you have the votes to get the budget passed. Then the clock starts. You start your committee hearings on the budget, which are at a minimum a day before. So that's why these sessions tend to go, when we do the budget votes, almost these real long marathon, 24, 28, 30 hours long, because we have to meet the committee requirements to have every single budget bill is heard in committee. There's testimony. It takes as long as it takes to get those bills through. Some of the appropriations hearings went 8-9 hours at a time. And then finally, when we have the votes, we'll vote on it. And, yeah, it does occur at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, because once you have the votes marshaled, you want to make sure you get the budget out, because if you recess for a day or two, you may end up having people peeled off the budget, lobbyists and whatnot will get in there and muck it up.
It's not done to keep the media away?
No.
Figuring the media won't be up at
No, the media got the budget. I mean, the budget that the Senate passed was not far from the budget that was eventually signed by the governor. It was pretty darn close. There was a few $100 million difference between the governor's budget, and you're talking about an $8.2 billion budget. So the change in the budget was a few $100 million between what the governor was looking at and what the Senate had passed out. So most of the stuff that was in the Senate budget was passed. I mean, so there was no surprises there, and that was out for almost 2 months before it was finally passed and signed by the governor.
Frank Antonori is with us. We're going to take a break right here, and we come back with Senator Antonori. We'll be talking about the current situation. Is there a budget surplus right now? What should the state do with that money? We'll hear from Senator Frank Antonori as we continue on the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Stay with us, 790-2040, if you would like to join in the conversation. From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com. Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Want to lose weight? You're not alone. Two out of three people in this country are now overweight. Using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, created by renowned cardiologist Dietmar Gahn, you could lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks. The program teaches proper nutrition and uses no drugs or artificial foods. Most insurance is accepted. To learn more, visit dietofhope.org or call 696-DIET.
The Arizona sun is intense regardless of the season. That's why you need Sierra Shutters and Sun Control, Southern Arizona's custom shutter specialist and proud supplier of O'Hare Shutters, locally manufactured blinds and state-of-the-art window tints. Our power bills are less after installing Sierra's 100% hardwood shutters and window tints in our home. Call Sierra Shutters and Sun Control 292-2212 or check out their extensive website, sierrasuncontrol.com. Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroAmorePizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50-plus housing awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
On the Buckmaster Show, the time flies with State Senator Frank Antonori, because Senator Antonori, let's face it, he has an opinion on many things, and he's a good talker. Anyway, speaking of talking, you want to make a quick comment about Olivia Cortez, one of the three candidates on the ballot in that recall with concerning Russell Pierce dropping out. Ms. Cortez says she's out of the race, but her name still be on the ballot.
Yeah, her name is going to – well, the ballots are printed and mailing ballots are going to go out in about 2 weeks, so her name will be on the ballot, and I guess you're
– Rosemary, yes.
Rosemary said they'll be notifying voters and posting signs, but it'll still have some impact, but I don't think she was going to be much of a factor anyways. The media had pounded her for the last couple months as being a sham candidate. Anybody that knew about her already knew anyways. So her dropping out I don't think is going to make much of an overall difference.
What's your prediction? Russell Pierce survives?
I think he's going to survive. It's going to be a squeaker. He'll probably pull it off by a couple percentage points. It'll be the toughest race he's ever run in his life, but he'll probably make it through.
790-2040. Go ahead, Senator.
If he doesn't, he'll be back in November. and that's just I don't see the futility in this, because they're going to put Mr. Lewis in there, and then Russell will run the next election cycle and get back in. So.
And how would Mr. Lewis be treated by the
Not ladies? Very, very friendly by the Republican caucus. He'll probably find more friends in the Democrat caucus than the Republican caucus, and that's where he'll probably end up.
Legislature is working to cut the debt. There are several news reports have said the Arizona state debt is $8.5 billion more than the current state budget. I thought we had a pretty much a balanced budget.
Well, we do have a balanced budget. As you know, there's a difference between a deficit and debt. So we have negated the deficit to where the revenue coming in and the appropriations going out are almost the same. However, during the Napolitano era and my 3 years in the legislature, as we tried to struggle to eliminate this deficit, we ended up borrowing a lot of money through a bunch of gimmicks, and we talked about some of those off air, which were, you know, we mortgaged,
including the Capitol's executive tower and legislative office building,
and several other state buildings were included in that, as well as we amortized the lottery, which was about $400 million, and then you have debt we're not paying interest on, which is basically the K-12 rollover. We've borrowed by doing these rollovers, which is basically instead of paying the bill on the 30th of the month, we pay it on the 1st of the following month, and it's a accounting gimmick. But those rollovers basically amount up to almost $8 billion. So we still have a big debt, bills to pay. And the interest, we're paying interest on about $2.5 billion of that $8 billion. And that's consuming general fund revenue that's being appropriated every year to pay the interest. And if we don't pay down that $2.5 billion, we'll continue to pay interest payments that we could be using for something else. So it would be smart to try to get that $2.5 billion liability down so the interest liability goes down.
Now, on the current budget, there is somewhat of a surplus.
Correct.
The sales tax revenues are looking a little better than anticipated. That's the good news. Some are saying maybe that should be put into a rainy day fund. Do you believe in that?
Yeah, well, that's going to be the big argument next session.
Is that going to be kind of the marquee issue in January when
things start up? The intent of the legislature, I could tell you, I don't know what the governor's intent is, but I know, speaking to my colleagues in both the House and the Senate, is we are going to try to baseline and freeze the budget that we have right now. So there aren't any additional reductions or increases in spending. Now, there may be some fluctuations because there's formulas that we have to abide by that will result in some adjustment. But the net dollar amount will be about the same, $8.2 billion. And the fight will be over what to do with the surplus. The current last month, we brought in about $80 million over projections. If that trend were to continue, we'd be in really good shape. We'd probably be at about $800 million over, but conservative estimates are going to be that we're going to be about $200 to $300 million over our projections that we'll have sort of as a surplus. And to divide that up, put half of it towards debt reduction, put half in the rainy day account, or put all of it towards debt reduction, or put all of it towards a rainy day will be what the discussion will be on.
Will the discussion be talking about that we need to create more jobs in this state? Will that be one
of the
big...
Is
that going to be the big... I know it's always been important, but now it seems like it's really up there with the economy struggling as it is.
We need some help from the federal government because I talked to a lot of business guys, and... they're worried about, one, Obamacare, I think, is probably the biggest thing that has them worried because there's a lot of authority given to regulators to write regulation that aren't in the law, and they will have to be dealing with stuff that they don't even know exists right now. A lot of them are worried about that. Of course, the financial markets, the European issues going on in Europe. I think we've got to deal with China. China is, there's no doubt in my mind, stealing jobs from the United States more than we can afford right now. Something has to be done with either a tariff or baselining their currency with American currency to at least get us on a level playing field. That has to happen, or it is going to be a financial disaster for the United States. And the Chinese are technically waging economic war against us, and I just hope everybody in Washington wakes up and realizes that. And then, of course, at the local level, we've got to continue to reduce the regulatory burden on our businesses here. There is an effort underway to eliminate the personal business property tax this year, which both Republicans and Democrats agree is a regressive tax that hurts business. The Democrats will likely want to see an offset of a tax increase somewhere else to make up for that. I don't think the Republicans are going to want to do that, and we'll have a nifty debate over that. But I think there is some mutual support for eliminating the personal business property tax because that hurts businesses that invest and try to grow their business. So if you want to go out and buy new equipment, you end up getting taxed by the state, not just for the sales tax, but each year you pay a property tax on that equipment, and I think that hurts a lot of business expansion.
What about social issues like education?
Well, there's a couple issues with regards to reform. I know the Board of Regents, I've talked with Fred Duvall, the president of the Board of Regents, has got some ideas that I think we're willing to look at. I told him I'm interested in some of those ideas to create an incentive-based funding system for the universities to fund them based on the production of certain degrees.
And I think they're asking for about a 18 or 19% increase. For the state university. That might be a little high. It's about 13%.
They're not going to get that, but they may get some if we get some concessions and agreements that they agree to do some refinements of the way they fund and provide assistance for certain degrees that we don't consider to have significant economic value, and then focus the effort on engineering and medicine and sciences that will help with our sort of tech corridor that we're trying to get going here. If they were to do that, then I could see there may be some effort to help funnel some funding to the universities. But and then at the K-12, we've got to do some major reforms in K-12. We've got to continue to look at alternatives that will increase competition and incentivize schools to produce a better product and not just throw money at them. And I think that's always been the challenge with the legislature, and you'll see, a vigorous debate on that this year.
You think during these election year, next year, of course, an election year, you think less gets done at the legislature than the off-year election years?
No, the second year I was in the legislature, what happens is a lot of members that are running for re-election really champion legislation through that they can get through that they can then go back to their district and run on. So I think you'll see a lot of stuff, a lot of members pushing issues that are near and dear to their hearts or near and dear to their districts to try to use that as a cause to say, hey, see what I did, you know, send me back for two more years. I got this done this year. So I would think you end up seeing a lot more get done. Now, some of the big sweeping stuff, the big complicated stuff that may sort of hurt or create some issues with members that have to compromise in support of that legislation and having to go back and explain why they compromised to a very fired up electorate may be difficult. So it depends. But I saw a lot of bills get through in election years.
Got about 1 minute to go. So when will you make your decision on whether or not you're going to run for Congress?
Well, I'm still hoping that the process with this redistricting isn't done and that the current district will be drawn a little bit more favorably. And I have some hope for that because I know Hispanics aren't really happy with the current map. And politics makes strange bedfellows. So I'm kind of rooting along with Raul Grijalva and guys like Richard Elias that they have some effort in changing the landscape a little bit. And then, of course, I'm still waiting to see what the Giffords camp is going to do with that regards. And, you know, when those two variables are solid enough for me, I'll make a decision.
Senator Antinori, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Bill.
Someone I know you respect very much, General John Wickham, is coming up next on the Buckminster
Show. I'll listen to him on the way back to work.
Okay. Frank Antinori, thanks for being with us. Stay with us now. The Buckminster Show continues. We'll be talking with General John Wickham. That's next. SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The sit-ins and rallies on Wall Street and elsewhere are being noticed at the White House, where President Obama says the demonstrators are expressing the frustration of the American people. Vice President Biden tells a Washington forum that the Republican Party is strong enough to beat President Obama next year. New census figures reveal that home ownership over the past decade has seen the biggest decline since the Great Depression. Around the world, people whose methods of communicating, acquiring information, and consuming entertainment have been changed radically by the inventions of Steve Jobs are mourning the death of the Apple co-founder. On Wall Street, the Dow's up 100 points, the Nasdaq ahead 26, and the S&P is trading 10 points higher. More details at srnnews.com.
With 2 out of 3 people in this country overweight, you're not alone in wanting to shed some pounds. Now you can lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope. The physician-supervised program created by renowned Tucson cardiologist Dietmar Gahn and certified nutrition counselor Elizabeth Gahn. To learn more about Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, call 696-696. Diet or log on to dietofhope.org.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson area. Donated items, thrift shop proceeds, volunteer hours, and financial gifts help support our philanthropic programs like Operation School Bell. Your generosity continues to change lives in our community. For more information on how you, too, can make a difference, visit us at AssistanceLeagueTucson.org. Assistance League of Tucson, volunteers working together.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
It's 12:33 on the Buckminster Show, and I am Bill Buckminster, your host at AM 1030 KVOI, the voice, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our friends listening in Douglas and up in Globe. So we've got three stations carrying the Buckmaster Show, so we are heard from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. Well, according to a new report from Veterans for Common Sense, a nonprofit, nonpartisan activist group for veterans' interests, nearly 20% of the more than 2 million troops who have served this country in Iraq and Afghanistan now suffer from mental health conditions. Nearly a third of those veterans may be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, one of the signature injuries of the conflicts. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line is our Buckmaster Show contributor on military and foreign affairs. Always a pleasure to welcome General John Wickham, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff and commander of all American and U.S. and U.N. forces in Korea. General Wickham served a total of 41 years in the Army. He is now retired in Oro Valley. General Wickham, good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you, Bill, as always.
Now, that's troubling, isn't it, this new report about the mental health issues?
Yes, it is, Bill. You're exactly right. It's probably one of the worst we've ever had in wars, and we're going to suffer this for many years to come as more veterans begin to realize that they do have this post-trauma stress disorder problem. And it's not easily managed. It takes skilled counseling. We've got some very good counselors down at the local Tucson VA Medical Center, so we're well poised to help. But you're exactly right. It's a serious malady.
And, you know, General Wickham, I don't know if they did these kind of surveys or studies about some of the mental health conditions for Vietnam veterans like yourself. I would assume that there was also a lot of the post-traumatic stress disorder for the Vietnam-era vets.
Well, there was, no doubt, Bill, and it goes back even to World War II, and you remember that awful situation where we had General Patton slapping a soldier in an Italian hospital, telling him, get back to the fight, you're a malingerer, and the reality was that he had PTSD. And we've come a long way to realize that this is a serious problem. It's not something that somebody conjures up to get out of the fight. It's something that comes as a result of doing things that are extraordinarily different than what we would think life is like when you see people killed next to you, as I've seen in my experience in Vietnam. Everyone suffers from some form of a PTSD, and when it gets to be severe, then you can't work, or it interferes with work. It interferes with marriage. We have the highest suicide rate in the Army's history and in the Marine Corps history, the highest rate of divorce with families, and it's all a result, in part, of PTSD.
And also, along those lines, Lieutenant General Mark Hertling, I believe he is the U.S. Army's top commander in Europe, is saying that alcoholism is becoming a big problem, and that is resulting in soldier discipline problems.
Exactly, Bill. As you know, I've been hard over against alcohol abuse in the Army. It was when I was Army Chief of Staff. It was when I was commander of the 101st Airborne Division and trying to stamp out DWIs, killing soldiers, and ruining families, and we were able to make a big difference at Fort Campbell. I did the same thing in Korea to reduce alcohol abuse, but it's become a problem, in part because of the myth that persists in the services today that if you aren't a two-fisted drinker, you aren't a womanizer, you aren't profane, you aren't going to be a good fighter. That's a myth, and we've got to turn that around. It's going to take a long time to turn that around. It doesn't fit in with the warrior ethic. It doesn't fit in with the kind of things that young people are taught to believe that if you want to be tough, you got to do all of those things. And alcoholism is an outgrowth of it.
General John Wickham is with us on the Buckmaster Show at 12:38. General Wickham, there's so much going on internationally. Iraq is now conceding. They really need the U.S. to stick around to train their troops. We've got the situation with the drawdown in Afghanistan. Begin with Iraq.
Iraq, I don't believe we really need to leave any troops there at all. We've been there for almost 10 years. We've trained a lot of what we call train the trainers. We've trained Iraqis to train themselves. And, yes, we may need some contractors to do some specialized training of aircraft mechanics, communications, medical care, that kind of thing. But for fighting, war fighting, they can do it well themselves. I don't think we need to stay there. I think the pressure that's coming is because there is a view in some parts of the U.S. government that we need to stay over there and guarantee the investment that we've made. We have built some of the biggest air bases in the world over there, air bases that will handle 10,000 people living there. And some could argue we did that with a reason. I don't think we need to stay there. And surely there are Iraqis, particularly Muqtada Sadr, the Shia imam there, believes that we should leave, and his thousands of his supporters the same way.
Let's move on to Afghanistan. As all the news reports have been coming out, there were some secret talks with the United States and the Taliban. Apparently nothing has come out of that. What's your take on that?
Yes, there's a constant drivel of that kind of thing. We are doing some secret talks. We have been, as you know, we're recently here lambasting the Pakistanis for double dealing with us. That they tell us that they are going after the insurgents, and yet at the same time they are supporting actively some of the most ruthless insurgents, like the Haqqani network, which is a family of killers, goes back decades. And the argument that the Pakistanis make to us, they worry about what's going on in Afghanistan. They see us leaving. They see Afghanistan becoming an unstable state, and it's on their western border. And they worry, of course, mostly about India. And they see India as using the Afghanistan unrest as a way of undermining Pakistan. And when Karzai, who's just gone now to India for a visit, says that he's going to have to work with the Indians to deal with some of the insurgent problems, it just puts the hair on fire with the Pakistanis.
Our government is using, and the military is using increasingly, this the drones, and the debate is really raging now. Some critics are alleging that the drones create more enemies by killing civilians than eroding the insurgent strength. What's the truth on these drones?
The truth on the drones, Bill, it's a marvelous jump in technology. The ability to have little aircraft, and there are even smaller ones now, that the kind of things that you and I as children played with and made out of balsa wood. But the ones that we're using, the Predator drones, they're flown by pilots down at Davis-Monthan, for example. And they're not launched from down there, of course. But these drones can stay in the air over a target for 20 to 24 hours a day. They can see through fog. They can see through mist. They can see through the dust at nighttime. And they have sophisticated targeting capabilities that can track vehicles moving, people moving on the ground, somebody putting a bomb in the ground. They can see that. And then they can launch specialized missiles, so specialized that even after the missile loses the track of a vehicle, it will follow where it will extrapolate where the vehicle should have gone and follow that track and kill it. That's how we were able to kill Alaki, this rogue priest of Taliban, Al-Qaeda kind of a priest in Yemen. Big debate about all of that, whether we did it constitutionally or not. There is a legal basis for what we did. The Justice Department said so. And so I think the drones are likely to be something, a wave of the future. We're going to use them more and more. when you fly the drones, you're flying an aircraft that's a third to half the cost of a regular fighter jet and no pilot. So if you shoot it down, you don't have a problem of loss of a life.
General Wickham, quickly running out of time, got about a minute left. I know you're following very closely in all your sources back in Washington about the defense budget cuts. What's the latest thinking?
Well, of course, we're taking about $400 billion out of the defense budget over the next 10 years. That's part of the deficit reduction deal. You've got this committee of 12 that are examining other ways to cut the federal spending over the next decade. And they may very well, if they cannot come to some kind of an agreement, there's an automatic requirement of cuts. And that, those cuts could lead to $800 billion more in the way of cuts for the Defense Department, which would absolutely be devastating. It would undermine our ability to fulfill the obligations that we have around the world. Now, that doesn't mean we can't make some cuts. We can, and we can do it judiciously. We've got almost 800 bases around the world in over 40 countries. A lot of these are holdover from a Cold War. There are billions of dollars cost for these bases. We ought to be closing many of them. Donald Rumsfeld, to his credit when he was Secretary of Defense, began to close a number of them. I'm not sure we need bases in Korea or Japan or in Germany, for that matter. So there are things that can be done, and so we can make some cuts.
Okay, General Wickham, always a pleasure. We'll let you now get out to your exercise. You ride 20 miles on the bike still every day?
No, it's only 10, Bill, but thanks for the boost.
Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Bill.
And my regards to your lovely wife, Ann. Thank you very much.
God bless, dear friend.
Okay.
Good program you're running.
Thank you very much. General John Wickham with us. He contributes at least once a month to the Buckmaster Show, and we talk a little bit about legal issues once a month on the Buckmaster Show, and Don Luce is waiting in the wings. We will be speaking with attorney Mr. Luce right after this.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Sierra Shutters and Sun Control is the leader in quality hardwood O'Hare brand shutters in Southern Arizona. 100% customer recommended and satisfied. Sierra Shutters and Sun Control also has the highest quality blinds, shades, and state-of-the-art window tints that really make a difference in keeping your home cooler. Check out their extensive website at sierrasuncontrol.com or give them a call at 292-2212 for a free in-home estimate.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
There are times when you save, and there are times when you
save big.
Whoa. Take vehicle loans, for instance. Any time of the year, Pyramid Federal Credit Union can help you save with lower rates. But now, for a limited time, we're helping you
save big.
That means rates as low as 4.5% APR when you buy or refinance a vehicle loan. plus terms up to 60 months, whether it's new or used. You won't just save. You'll
save big.
That never gets old. Stop by any Pyramid Federal Credit Union or visit us at pyramidfcu.com to learn more. That's 4.5% APR vehicle loans for a limited time. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options.
That's huge.
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Learn more at pyramidfcu.com. 4.5% APR and vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
A simple solution to foot and lower back problems could be a top-quality, custom-made foot orthotic created by Bob Novak. A certified pet orthist, Bob is the best in Southern Arizona in the creation of the right foot support that your body needs and at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak a call, 795-2553, or visit him at Arizona Limb and Brace, Rosemont and 5th Street. Your feet will thank you every day.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
It's 12:50 on the Buckmaster Show, and we are joined by attorney Don Luce of Luce, Brown & Associates in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. He visits with us once a month. He's the author of 2 very popular books about the law in Arizona. The first book is titled Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers. There will be a second edition coming out shortly after the first of the year. And Mr. Luce's other book, Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Don Luce, good to see you.
Good to see you, Bill. Thank you.
You know, what's fascinating about this state, one of the things is we've got some crazy politics and we've got some very interesting laws, don't we?
We do, Bill. There's never a lack of cases to talk about when you talk about Arizona, whether it's local politics or whether it's on the national stage. We always have cutting-edge litigation that drives the country. Good examples would be SB 1070, Arizona's employer sanctions law, and now we have new litigation that likely will find its way up to the Supreme Court as well.
Yeah, and well, actually, this state probably sends more states' rights issues to Washington than just about any other.
I would agree. If you look at the cases that have gone to the Supreme Court in the last several years, a surprisingly large number of those cases are from Arizona, and regarding some very significant issues when it comes to states' rights.
Well, maybe we will begin with the Attorney General Tom Horn saying that, since we're talking about states' rights, that a federal judge's rejection of an Alabama county's challenge to the Voting Rights Act is likely a death knell for a similar Arizona lawsuit. So speaking of states' rights, here we go.
Exactly. This is a challenge to the Voting Rights Act. Alabama had a similar challenge, and they lost. And the lawsuit filed by Attorney General Horn 2 months ago makes essentially the same arguments. And interestingly, it will go before the same judge. So our Attorney General has said that there's a likelihood that that case is going to be unsuccessful. But again, these are cases that may find their way to the United States Supreme Court, having to do with the ability of the federal government to regulate the state's elections. And as a side note, Bill, the reason that Arizona is interested in this is because way back in 1975, Arizona got put on a list of states that have a history of discrimination when it comes to voting rights. And so any state on that list actually has to go to the DOJ before any change to the voting laws and get permission in advance. And Attorney General Horn has argued that in his lawsuit that the federal government does not have the right to require us to essentially get pre-approval for changes to our voting laws. But again, the Arizona case presented much of the same arguments, and the judge in that case denied Alabama's request to essentially get an exemption from the Voting Rights Act.
And Mr. Horn is contending that any discrimination against minorities when it comes to voting is, as Mr. Horn says, history. So we will see how all of that plays out. As we mentioned, Don Luce, at the beginning of the show, Olivia Cortez, one of the three candidates in the Russell Pierce recall, today filed a statement of withdrawal with Maricopa County. She is out of the race. However, her name will remain as one of the three candidates on the ballot.
This is a very unusual turn of events because just yesterday it was announced that Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Ed Burke had rejected a bid to remove her name from the ballot. So the people who wanted her name removed were unsuccessful, and so she did what they weren't able to do in court.
I mean, I don't understand. I have a Xerox copy of her withdrawal statement, and it does not go in. Well, I'm sure we'll hear very soon about what the reason is, but at this point, I don't really have any idea why she is going off the ballot.
Well, to provide the backstory briefly, the people who wanted her removed from the ballot had argued to Judge Burke that she was put on the ballot simply to divide the vote between the people who are opposed to Russell Pierce.
Jerry Lewis's camp.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
So the argument that they were making is because she was disingenuous in her desire to actually take elected office, she should be removed. The judge did not buy that argument and, in fact, refused to remove her name from the ballot. So up until just a few hours ago, we had a three-way race in the recall election, which is going to take place next month. Now it'll be a race between Russell Pierce and Jerry Lewis, but not because of something the courts did, but rather because of something one of the candidates did.
And just what we said at the top of this interview, what a strange state this is for politics. The Arizona medical marijuana saga continues. The DEA raided a Arizona medical marijuana clinic recently. This story goes on and on and on.
Well, it does. And backing up a little bit, your listeners will recall that in November of last year, 11 months ago, the voters of Arizona approved, very, very narrowly, but approved nonetheless, the Arizona medical marijuana law. And under that law, it made it legal to distribute marijuana to eligible patients, and there were very strict controls put into place in terms of who would become eligible. But the Department of Health Services, several months ago, refused to issue licenses to medical marijuana dispensaries. So you had the dichotomy of patients who actually had the certification required by the law, but no place to buy the medical marijuana. The Attorney General of our state recently filed a federal lawsuit asking the district court here, and I believe the case has been assigned to Judge Bolton, who's the same judge that ruled on SB 1070 recently. Judge Bolton is being asked to render what essentially would be a declaratory judgment. In other words, that Arizona employees can implement the terms of the medical marijuana law without having to essentially worry about federal prosecution. Now, we just have a story out that the DEA has made a raid on a medical marijuana clinic.
Yeah, in Tempe.
I don't know what that does to Attorney General Horn's argument, but I would think it might lead some credibility to it.
Yeah, and the raid resulted in the arrest of the clinic's owner and his girlfriend. So that story is going to continue on. We're quickly running out of time. In other legal news, since you were with us last, The state has or is seeking a reversal on the ruling on gay benefits to gay state and university employees.
This affects about 225 people, and these people are the partners of employees of Arizona State University, University of Arizona, and some other state agencies. What happened was, in 2008, then-Governor Janet Napolitano issued a rule which defined who a dependent was. And essentially, it allowed domestic partners to be considered dependents for purposes of insurance coverages. And so under that rule, homosexual partners were allowed to essentially receive health insurance benefits. Our current governor has tried to essentially reverse that rule, and the litigation now before the Ninth Circuit is whether the state can do it or not. The three-panel Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judges ruled the state has to provide the benefits. If it provides it to anybody, it has to be to everyone.
Don Luce has been with us. Don is the author of Arizona Laws 101 and Estate Planning in Arizona. Mr. Luce, we will see you in November. Thanks for being with us. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger, and Associates Certified Public Accountants, 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Coming up tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview with the legendary restaurant owner, Janos Wilder, will be with us here on the Buckmaster Show talking about downtown development and his new restaurant downtown. Also, of course, we'll have the Friday Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. Have a great afternoon. See you tomorrow at noon on the Buckmaster Show.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas and 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.